This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Rob Ferret.
The recent shootings in San Bernardino and Paris and suspected hate crimes targeting mosques in retaliation have highlighted the tensions that can exist between people of different religions.
But our next guests say conflict is not inevitable between people of different belief systems, and they're making the case for more productive and positive relationships. They say we can start by boosting our interfaith literacy and learning from one another about our different faiths.
Our guests are both part of the group Interfaith Youth Core. Carr Harkrader is with us. Carr, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
And Prerna Abbey joins us as well. Prerna, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Well, to start off, Carr, what do we mean by the term interfaith literacy?
Well, that's a really good question. And I first want to say it's a little bit different than what you would think of as religious literacy. I think with basic religious literacy, we're thinking of some facts and figures about different religions or non-religious worldviews out there. So, for instance, how many Muslims there are in the world or what are the core beliefs of Christianity. With interfaith literacy, we're really talking about having knowledge of other religious and non-religious backgrounds so that you can positively work with others, right? So positively do social action with other groups of people who have a different religious worldview than yourself.
Is it about looking for that common ground?
Well, right. So that's a key element of it. Here at Interfaith Youth Core, that's a main part of our mission is working with college students, with people across higher education to promote common ground and to promote really common service, right? So working together with people who come from many different backgrounds and yet have a common goal.
And Priya, let's bring you in on this. Why is it important for people to understand each other's belief systems instead of just being friendly to each other and in general kind? Why do they need to have that understanding?
Well, I think it impacts so much of what we do and the ways that we're interacting with each other. So I think, you know, I work on our alumni relations team. I'm working with young adults who are a few years into the workforce. And we hear so often ways that having that appreciative knowledge, knowing things about the ways that other people see the world and the way that they practice makes a difference in the workplace even. So that's just one example, being able to understand why you might not want to have a Friday afternoon meeting because your Jewish colleagues may not be able to attend or your Muslim colleagues may not be able to attend makes a better work environment and a better relationship between colleagues.
So the workplace is one example. Priya, what are some other arenas where this comes into play?
I think it comes into play definitely in the school environment. It definitely impacts the way that children are able to learn. So, for example, I came from a Hindu family, and being in a school environment in the suburbs of New York where nobody knew what Hinduism was and all of my classmates were Christian was really difficult for me to be able to take off days for important holidays that my family wanted to celebrate or to be able to eat the food or to offer any information to my classmates or even my teachers about the ways that I wanted to celebrate who I was very hard, where it was very easy for my classmates. And it was difficult for me as a young child to understand why they got to have that and I couldn't.
Hmm. And Carr, are there right ways and wrong ways to start learning about different people's religious belief systems, or is any place a good place to start?
Well, we like to focus on three main areas, which is, one, start trying to cultivate your appreciative knowledge of different traditions that are out there. So that can be done in conventional ways, right, like being in a religious studies class, say, if you're in college or reading a book about a different religion. But we also talk about working with people, working with individuals who are different than you, and learning, kind of like what Prerna was saying in an elementary school example, learning from your peers around you, and then as you get older, working with them in different service situations. That's a big component of what we talk about. So I would say the one piece is that appreciative knowledge. The second one there is identifying values of commonality, right? And so we often talk about service, for instance. The value of service is something that many different religious and non-religious traditions share and that you can organize events around. And then that third piece is understanding interfaith history, right? So having some idea of events or people or concepts in the American past that influences today to support, understand, and appreciate one another.
So, Priya, what do you do if along the way you're working with a group of people on developing this interfaith literacy, mm-hmm. and a person of one faith encounters something that is maybe something that they don't believe, maybe it's in direct contradiction of what they've been taught growing up in their faith, how do you handle those moments?
Sure. Well, I think a big misconception about interfaith cooperation and working with people of other faiths is that we should all end up with this idea that, oh, we all believe the same thing, where that definitely isn't true. And for some of us, that might be something that we believe or hope to believe. And for some of us, that's something that definitely is antithetical to what we believe, in direct opposition to what it is that we hold dear. And so I think that's a very important to recognize, is that interfaith cooperation is not about ending up in this space where we all believe the same thing, but rather having respect for folks who do believe different things and being able to recognize the value of some of the different things that people believe that might be different from you, why it's something that they hold dear and why it makes them a person that you appreciate and want to be around.
And I'll jump in there just briefly to say, to add on to what Prana said, is that the reason, I often tell students that we're working with this, the reason why interfaith cooperation is important is not that we're all the same or not that we all agree, but because we all are different. And that's the reason why we need to work together on important issues in our culture and our society.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Carr Harkrader and Prana Abbey with the Interfaith Youth Corps, and they're making the case that we should boost our knowledge about different belief systems. And we want to know, Carr, can you tell us a little bit about how you do this? Do you do it individually? Do you do it in groups? How does that actual work get done?
Oh, that's a really good question. So Interfaith Youth Corps works with college students and staff and faculty at different universities across the country, right? And so it can look like, you know, depending from campus to campus, it can look like a lot of different things. One thing that we've actually seen that has been really successful is what we call speed faithing, and it's a chance for young people to articulate a little bit about their background, but then also why their background motivates them to work with other people. And these are quick little rounds of, it can be from 5 to 10 to 15 minutes each, where people can come, hear from someone who is from a particular background, get a piece of knowledge about that background, but more importantly, understand why that person, whether they're Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Hindu or Jain, why they want to work with others. So that's something that I've seen really be successful at different colleges across the country.
So what kinds of things might people share?
Well, let me think. One of the things that I've seen, for instance, Utah State University out in Logan, Utah, they recently put on a speed faithing event, and there was one student that talked about her shaman background, right? So she practiced shamanism. And as you might guess, out in Utah, a majority of the students that go to that campus were LDS, or Mormon, as we commonly call it. And she was able to share a piece of her background that normally a lot of those students wouldn't have been able to hear, right? So something very different than their background. But she connected it to the reason why she's so involved in so many service organizations on her campus was because of her belief in certain shamanistic practices. So it was really an interesting, I think, connection of her personal story and, right, her personal beliefs with a belief that a lot of those LDS students shared, which is serving the community, serving your campus, and supporting your family.
And Prana, the idea here is partially that as these groups of people who've learned about each other and the ways that they're different and their common ground, is that they go out into the world and they interact in as like little seeds of ambassadors of goodwill and mm-hmm. and understanding. Have you seen that kind of thing happen in the people that you've worked with?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, I work with our alumni. So some of the students that we're working with, when they go out into the workforce, I get to see all of the amazing things that we're doing. And they really are across the board. So as you might guess, some of them go into ministry and are working as pastors and rabbis and imams and college chaplains. And they're, you know, involved in this work in more obvious ways. But we have plenty of students who choose to go into healthcare and become doctors and nurses and careers along those lines, and we see them lifting up this value of how important it is to understand the what's going on with folks of other traditions and the way that that might impact their health care. So, for example, the understanding that a religious community is often more than just religion and that it can be really impactful in healthcare interventions. So we have an alum here in Chicago who has been working with churches on the south and west sides of Chicago to do interventions around diabetes prevention. And that's because he has an understanding of what the religious community offers to the folks who are a part of it.
We're talking with Carr Harkrader and Prerna Abbey right now with the Interfaith Youth Corps, and they're telling us about how we can boost our knowledge about different belief systems. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We continue our conversation about interfaith literacy and the effort to build understanding between people from different faiths and belief systems. Our guests are Prerna Abbey and Carr Harkrader from Interfaith Youth Corps.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Is there an interfaith group in your community? Have you been part of a local public service effort that brought people together of different faiths? And do you wish you knew more about another religion or that people knew more about yours, maybe? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We have a link to an interfaith literacy quiz posted there, too, that you can take a swing at. And Prerna, we're going to go back to you right now. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking earlier about people coming together, going out into the world. But what about the place we're in right now, not just in this country, but in other places in the world, where there are times of mistrust and fear sometimes when we approach the prospect of another belief system? Mm-hmm. And not everyone is going to enter into this sort of learning opportunity willingly. So how do you approach situations like that?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult, especially when you have appreciation for a tradition like Islam and for your Muslim neighbors, and you're seeing how folks around you maybe don't. And I think that this is actually a time where it's important for us to be empowered to support our Muslim American neighbors and friends and colleagues. And, you know, there have been lots of memes going around on Facebook and social media of lists of ways that the average person can do something when it feels like there really isn't a lot to do. And ranging from, you know, as simple as if you see a woman in a hijab on the train, smile at her, give her a little nod, and just, you know, that extra sense of security that, you know, you have an understanding that, you know, she is not ISIS or she is not extremism embodied here in our country and that she's an American just like us.
And how would you answer that question, Carr?
Well, it's interesting because actually as we were waiting to come back on air after the break, I heard on your newsfeed about the event down in Virginia with the school system where some parents got upset about their students writing in Arabic. And it was, you know, I don't know if you can tell from my accent, but I'm from the South, and so I'm a little bit familiar with that area. And ironically, just a few miles down the road from that county, Augusta County, is Charlottesville, Virginia, where Thomas Jefferson grave is. And on that grave, he has three things, which is one, that he was the author of the Declaration of Independence. The second one is that he was the founder of the University of Virginia. And the third one is that he helped write and draft the Statute for Virginia on Religious Freedom. And I think it's facts like that. You know, that statue in Virginia, which later influenced the U.S. Constitution and the religious freedom and diversity that we have in America today, that fact is just as important to know as what's happening one county over today. And I think if more people knew about and knew information about the religious diversity in our country and the religious tolerance that we've traditionally had, I think that will make a big difference so that events like what's happening in Virginia now will be less common.
Do you think when people have these knowledge gaps, when they're ignorant about the other people around them and what they might believe, that leads more easily to fear?
Well, right, it can lead to a lot of things, right? I mean, to some people, it'll be a challenge to learn more, right? And to some people, it might lead to fear. But I think we often talk about how having some kind of appreciative knowledge about another group will build stronger and more positive relationships with other people, right? And if you're in a relationship, and by that I mean either a friendship or a close coworker or maybe a close classmate, then you're less likely to fear that group as a whole, right? And Pew, which is, you know, a national research site, has done a lot of good polling on this, where it shows you are, I think they said, 3 times more likely to have positive feelings towards all Muslims if you have one Muslim friend. And I think that goes across the board for a lot of different religious and non-religious worldviews. So I think you're right that fear is one challenge that you have when you might lack some knowledge of other groups, but that can be easily remedied by hopefully cultivating some of this interfaith literacy that we're talking about today.
And Prina, we've been talking some about appreciative knowledge. Can you give us some concrete examples of what that might look like?
Sure. I think one form of appreciative knowledge is an understanding of, you know, what are some of the things that your friends and neighbors believe. So, for example, in Islam, a practice on Eid, which is one of their major holidays, one of the Eids that is celebrated, there's often sacrifice of an animal, but it's not just left, then that meat is often used to feed folks around you. And oftentimes in the U.S., that meat is shared with families in need. Folks might donate it to a local shelter or other place where that meat can be used, or they might donate overseas to a community that's more in need than their own community. And I think that's a really great thing to know, that this is a value that your friends and neighbors hold. And I think that's something that not to say that we believe the same thing, but I think that a lot of us could find a similar sense in what we believe in our own minds.
We're talking about interfaith literacy right now with Carr Hartgrader, Campus Engagement Associate for Interfaith Youth Corps, and also talking with Prina Abbey, Alumni Relations Associate at Interfaith Youth Corps as well. And Carr, I want to ask you, do people ever have a fear that if they learn about another religion, that somehow they're maybe betraying their own faith?
Well, you know, I think that well might be the case for some people. I think for the overwhelming majority of people in the United States today, though, there's a realization that we not only, you know, not only is it nice to know something about a different religion or non-religious worldview, but it's needed, right? You can't, as Prina was mentioning earlier, there's very few jobs that you can hold nowadays without interacting with somebody from a different religious worldview than you. There's very few places you can live without some type of religious diversity. And so whatever, whether there's a hang up there or not, I think, one, I can reassure people you shouldn't be fearful of that at all. But two, I would say, you know, embrace it. And actually, a lot of the students that we have worked with have said that they've been strengthened in their own faith when learning about others, right? Because in a way, it almost forces you to think about, okay, well, what do I believe then? So I think in many cases, it's the exact opposite.
And Prina, what if people want to get involved in this kind of thing, but they don't live somewhere, for instance, where there is an interfaith group? What can they do?
No, I think that's a really great question, because so for so many of us, there isn't one, right? I think there are a lot of ways. One is simply to reach out to your friends and neighbors, right? Religion is something that's on that list of things you should never talk about. And, you know, I think especially at a time like now, it shouldn't be. This is a great time to share, you know, what it is that you and your family are experiencing or celebrating or struggling with at this time of year. And I think that there are plenty of experiential things that you can do as well. Most religious communities would be absolutely thrilled for someone of a different religious or non-religious background to come and visit and to experience what their service might be like, not to say that you're practicing with them, but to experience and to see and to learn you know, what it is that happens in the mosque down the street or at the synagogue down the street or the temple. And, you know, there are lots of resources out there, and if you contact these houses of worship, they are more likely than not absolutely thrilled to welcome you.
And let me also put in a shameless plug. If you are listening somewhere and want to know more about interfaith literacy, you can go to ifyc.org/podcast, and we have a whole podcast that we host on interfaith literacy each month.
And Kara, I want to follow up on something Preya said about reaching out to people and talking about one of those do not talk about subjects, which is religion. How do you do that? I mean, it sounds like one of those things that we can talk about, but how do you say, tell me about your religion? I mean, it's not something you start with as at the very top of I'm getting to know you question. How do you get there?
Right. Well, you're right that it's not a very good pickup line, right? So I wouldn't start with that, if you're just meeting someone for the first time. But one way to think about it is with, like Prana was saying, being intentional about reaching out to local community groups, whether they're houses of worship, whether they're just diverse community or civic groups in your area. I think those are also places that are wonderful, wonderful grounds for finding that kind of that social capital, right, of many diverse people coming together. Another thing is to be intentional in how you either plan events or the type of event that you're planning. So that speed faithing that I mentioned earlier is we found a very effective way of kind of breaking that ice, right, that awkward tension that you mentioned, and saying, you know what, this is going to be a space where we talk about this. People shouldn't feel awkward. I'm going to share some knowledge from my own tradition, and then take a few questions. And actually, that's I can't say enough how popular that is with a lot of the people we work with, because it does break that ice, it breaks that tension. And so I would just say being intentional, being proactive, definitely, you know, don't think of one individual, right, as a representation, anybody, of any, you know, religion. So I wouldn't corner anybody in the store or at the grocery store or wherever. But just be intentional, be thoughtful, and I think you can learn a lot that way.
Kara, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you all for having us.
And Prana, thank you to you too.
Thank you both.
That was Kara Harkrader and Prana Abbey. They're both with the Interfaith Youth Corps, and we're talking about about interfaith literacy with them. And you can find a link to an interfaith literacy quiz on the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.